double life of Bill Oakley. If he's not writing comedy scripts for TV shows like The Simpsons and Portlandia, chances are pretty good that he's delivering fast food reviews that make people's mouths water. Bill has been dubbed the Gordon Ramsay of fast food. Does that mean that Gordon Ramsay is the Bill Oakley of slow food? We'll have to get back to you on that. Bill Oakley made his mark during his time as a writer and showrunner, nay, executive producer, for The Simpsons. He's the one who came up with the idea for most meta Simpsons episodes ever. The one with Homer's arch enemy, Frank Grimes, or Grimy as he liked to be called. Bill also wrote the steamed ham episode, which 20 years later has become a meme. We caught up with Bill at his home office in Portland, Oregon, to find out how he launched his comedy career.
The coin of the realm in TV writing is writing a spec script, which means writing a sample episode of a show that you like for free and showing it around to show that you can write. We hadn't had much luck for about 4 years. And finally, someone told us to get real and write a really good script for a show that we loved. Seinfeld had just come out. It was called The Seinfeld Chronicles. So it had only been on for a few episodes. And we were like, okay, well, nobody's seen this show, but it's hysterical. And we will write an episode of it. And we did. And it basically got us through the door. It got us like 10 or 12 meetings at places like Cheers and Murphy Brown and places like that. And also The Simpsons. It got us Mike Reese and Al Jean at The Simpsons. At that time, I don't think one of them had never even heard of Seinfeld, read it and thought it was funny and decided to assign us an episode to write. And that was the beginning of how this whole thing started.
You and your writing partner, Josh Weinstein, were appointed to be executive producers and showrunners for the 7th and 8th seasons of The Simpsons. What were your visions for the kinds of episodes that you wanted to create?
Honestly, we just wanted to copy season 3, because season 3 was run by Mike Reese and Al Jean, who were the guys who hired us, who were geniuses. And I believe that season 3 of The Simpsons is the best season of any TV show of all time. And by the way, we didn't work on that, so it's not like blowing my own horn. And so we were just like, when we took over, we were like, let's make this like season 3. And we kind of reverse engineered season 3. Said, okay, well, it had 2 Lisa episodes, 1 Sideshow Bob episode, 1 Itchy and Scratchy episode, you know, X number of emotional episodes. And we kind of just mapped it out from there using our staff and our love of the show, try to concoct a season, for at least for season 7, that kind of echoed season 3. For season 8, we decided to be a little more experimental, because at that point we were like, you know, this is one of the wrongest things that anyone ever thought, but we were pretty sure the show was going to be over in by season 9 or 10. Because sitcoms don't go that long. Cheers, MASH, all those ones, they were all over by season 9 or 10.
So same with Seinfeld, yeah.
Yeah, so we figured that this show would be over. So we were like, let's just have all the fun we can have with this thing before it runs out of steam. So in season 8, we were just kind of like, we want to do all the craziest ideas, all the stuff we always wanted to do, and then we will leave, because this thing is not going to be around much longer. And now, of course, here we are, it just got renewed for season 34.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. Yeah. One of the greatest episodes, in my opinion, that was made while you and Josh were in charge was Homer's Enemy. What's the origin story behind this one?
That's another one. That's another one that was like, let's just go for it. Homer's Enemy was my idea, but all of my idea was, let's give him an enemy. So I was like, let's come up with a story about a guy who is the polar opposite of Homer and what happens. And then we took it to the writer's room and John Swartzwelder. We all kind of mutually came up with this thing about Frank Grimes. And the thing about the Frank Grimes story is that Frank is a humorless fellow and he pays the ultimate price. You can't tamper with the Simpsons universe and you can't question it.
And what do you have to show for your lifetime of sloth and ignorance?
What?
Everything! A dream house, 2 cars, a beautiful wife, a son who owns a factory, fancy clothes, and lobsters for dinner! And do you deserve any of it? No!
What are you saying?
I'm saying you're what's wrong with America, Simpson. You coast through life, you do as little as possible, and you leech off decent, hardworking people, like me. If you lived in any other country in the world, you'd have starved to death long ago.
He's got you there, Dad.
Yeah, exactly. It's so, as you touched on there, it's such a meta episode because the presence of Frank, it really undermines the Simpsons universe. And how is Homer still employed? How does he have this beautiful house, this beautiful wife, and
right.
a son who owns a factory? Because that other storyline is that Bart buys the factory, and I love that line. How did fans react to this episode?
I don't know. TV is so different now that you have Twitter and you have the online world. But in whenever 1996 or 7, when that was broadcast, you had Usenet news groups. You had alt.tv.simpsons where people commented on The Simpsons, except they hated everything. They hated everything since season 3. So after a certain point, we stopped reading that. And also TV critics, you know, a TV critic might review your show once a year, but they didn't usually review shows that were in their 7th or 8th season. So we never got any feedback from anybody. The only thing we ever heard, we got one letter from a viewer, who a guy who was in the Army working at like a supply depot, who said, "You guys nailed it. The whole world is filled with stupid morons like Homer." The guy loved it and appreciated it because apparently he was living the life of Frank Grimes. So we put that up on the wall and we all enjoyed that one guy's response to it. But that was the only thing we heard for 20 years.
Hmm. Yeah. You're also responsible for the steamed ham sketch that originally aired in 1996 in an anthology episode called 22 Short Films About Springfield. 20 years later, steamed hams became a meme. How did that happen?
That was exciting. So when we did 22 Short Films, everybody got to write a sketch for their favorite character. And I called Chalmers and Skinner. And Skinner had burned his roast, trying to pass. It's an old, you know, goes back to the days of radio or vaudeville, a sketch where the boss is coming to dinner and something goes wrong. And Skinner's trying to pass off his burned hamburgers from a fast food restaurant as his own cooking.
You know, these hamburgers are quite similar to the ones they have at Krusty Burger.
Oh, no. Patented Skinner Burgers. Old family recipe.
For steamed hams.
Yes.
Yes. And you call them steamed hams, despite the fact they are obviously grilled.
This is not a traditional joke-filled Simpsons thing. It's actually rather joke-free. It's a build, and it's kind of a sketch that, you know, maybe like some certain Monty Python sketches where it just gets more preposterous. Anyway, and then it became kind of an internet thing two decades later. And I think what happened is that the way I've been able to trace it back in a couple articles was that people in Australia, there's a lot of Simpsons fans in Australia, started calling their supermarket chain they have called Woolworths and asking for steamed hams as a joke. And then Woolworths they started to play along with it, and they made these videos about steamed hams, and they put up signs in their grocery stores that says, "We don't sell steamed hams, but we do have ground beef that you're going to love." And then things started to take off from there. It became a thing. And that was probably between 2014 and 2018. And by 2018, it had peaked. It became meme of the year, according to people who keep records of such things for 2018. And people remixed it. There's hundreds of remixes on YouTube. Many absolutely brilliant.
You pretended I was just stretching my calves on the windowsill. Isometric exercise.
Why is there smoke coming out of your oven, Seymour?
That isn't smoke. It's steam. Steam from the steam clams we're having. Steam clams.
And it was thrilling for me because I didn't know if anybody even liked this thing to begin with. That's the story of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You pay homage to steamed hams with your new side hustle as a fast food critic. Your annual awards are called the Steamies. And you post videos of your reviews on Instagram and Twitter. Why did you decide to start reviewing fast food?
You know, it's interesting. I did not really start. I've been doing it all my life. I just didn't put it on Instagram.
Okay.
And I've always been very interested in fast food, primarily because I was probably so deprived of it as a kid, because when I grew up, they didn't have fast food restaurants everywhere. And it was a real treat to be driven 60 miles to McDonald's. So I've been interested in fast food. I talked about it with my family and my friends, and then I started talking about it on Twitter. And the turning point came in 2018 when McDonald's decided they were going to release these new fresh beef quarter pounders. And I went to try them. I was just going to tweet a prose review of them. But then I was like, why don't I just film on my phone? And it was really popular. And so I just kept doing it.
You describe yourself as the Gordon Ramsay of fast food. Does this mean that Gordon Ramsay is the Bill Oakley of good comedy served quickly?
You know, that first of all, Gordon Ramsay is actually a very talented chef. And I'm not, it's just not, I didn't dub myself the Gordon Ramsay. That was The Wrap, which is
right.
Tell me that.
Yeah.
So
okay.
It's not entirely accurate, but the thing that Gordon Ramsay is known for is obviously is being brutally frank and sometimes kind of humorous in his derision. And I think that's where I become the Gordon Ramsay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was such a clever epithet, description. I thought for sure you would have come up with it. But the rap can be witty too, yeah. You've tried a lot of food from a place where I've spent too many years, the province of Manitoba in Canada. What's your impression of Manitoba cuisine?
You know, first of all, I'd say it's probably mainly about the potato chips. Canadian potato chips are really something else, and there's so many varieties, so many regional varieties all across Canada that we never get here in the U.S. And I've been – that's why even in the Steamies this year, I had a special category for just for Canadian potato chips delivered by Jay Baruchel, famous Canadian comedian.
Right.
And like that's – I would say what stands out in my mind specifically is – and I think Winnipeg stands at the intersection of a number of different regions in terms of the potato chips. Like they get a number of different ones. And the Manitoba honey dill sauce is the best condiment – is possibly the best condiment I've ever had.
Yeah, I tried that one when I was last in Winnipeg, I guess a little over a year ago, and it is really good. What do you like about – why did that win Condiment of the Year?
It's weird that this is a condiment that is so regional that it's not even available outside of Manitoba, much less in America. Somebody told me about it. I have a number of followers from that region, and somebody told me that I had to try it, and I ordered it for like $25 a jar to be shipped here, and – it blew me away. The sauce is marketed as a chicken finger dipping sauce. It's only for dipping chicken nuggets or chicken fingers in, although you can use it for many things. That's how they market it. So I did it. And it's so good. I just can't believe everybody's not eating it all the time. And it's not become a standard condiment that you get at McDonald's with your chicken nuggets because it's sweet and it has a thick honey texture to it. But the dill gives it a certain unusual spiciness that really makes it noteworthy. And like, man, every time I make chicken nuggets, that is all I want is just to dip them, every one of them, in Manitoba honey dill sauce.
Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, people send you packages of food. What is the most pleasant surprise you've received?
I've gotten so many things from generous fans all over the world. I would say, honestly, the most surprising thing I ever received is a bunch of fancy ice from Minnesota. That the Minnesota manufacturer of really fancy ice. And by fancy ice, I mean the kind that's used in really fancy, expensive cocktails that is totally clear. The manufacturer of this ice sent me a big box of Minnesota treats along with several bags of his ice, which made the journey without melting. And there were ice cubes. There's cubes that were big, and there were spheres that were like shards. And I've never had such great ice. So that was a surprise.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, and they weren't flavored. They weren't flavored ice or anything. Yeah. 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 You're working now as the head writer and executive producer on season 3 of an HBO Max animated series called Close Enough. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yes. This show is created and run by J.G. Quintel, who is an animation genius and created the show Regular Show, which ran on Cartoon Network for probably about 10 years. And I had worked with him a little bit on Regular Show back in the very earliest days. And I had worked with him on this show back in its very earliest days as well. It's a very surreal, if you ever saw a Regular Show, it's extremely surreal. This show takes that same sensibility and animation style, but grounds it a little bit more it's about a family. It's about a young family and also their divorced best friends who happen to live with them to save money on rent. And the show deals with kind of relatable problems of being a young parent, but it always kind of spirals into surrealness in a really funny way.
Oh, the Bruins bar.
Yeah, from the night we first met.
I thought you were so hot. When you said hi, I saw fireworks.
Let's reminisce a little faster.
What the hell? Our divorce papers? You said you sent me these over a year ago.
I must have gotten distracted. You know, we're in a golden age of TV.
So we're still married? You need to let go and sign these.
So I was delighted when I got a call to ask if I'd be interested in returning to the show to be head writer and executive producer for season 3. Now, that said, to me, JG makes all the calls, but I'm the head writer. I supervise the writing.
So beyond Close Enough and also continuing to your work as doing fast food criticism, do you have things that you want to do?
I have 4 other projects that I'm working on for my next my next job after Close Enough, the primary one of which is a spinoff of the show Mission Hill. That show was probably our greatest success and our greatest failure, and that it was a show that was completely our vision, but it was canceled after 2 episodes. But then it ran on Adult Swim over and over for 10 straight years, where it built up this cult following. I guess I'd say. So what we have is we have a show that is a spinoff of the show. It's essentially the same show, just with a few differences, that we've been working on for about a year. And we are going to take it out to buyers very soon. Hopefully someone will buy it. And then we have a couple other shows, too, that I have a couple other shows I've been working on that I'm all excited about, not all of which are animated. And I'm also going to start manufacturing vinyl toys starting.
Oh, really?
Real soon. Oh, cool. Yes. It sounds like I'm real busy, but in fact, most of these projects have been in gestation for 3 straight years, and they all just happen to be coming together this month.
Oh, cool. Bill Oakley, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Bill Oakley is a comedy writer, fast food reviewer, creator of memes, and a vinyl toy manufacturer. You can find out more about Bill at WPR.org/beta.
I just never imagined that I could write a book. So that, I think, is really a major thing that I learned about myself, is that I could.
Coming up, actor, comedian, and writer Lorraine Newman, one of the original Not Ready for Primetime players on Saturday Night Live. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.